talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I am Paul Gallant in for Jeremy Branham. He is Joel Blank. Congratulations to Jeremy Branham and his new son, Crew, and his wife, his family. Very happy to see everything go well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Joel, I don't know if you are big into this show, but...
I don't know what the hell that show is.
Uncultured slob.
No, kiss my ass. Just because different strokes for different folks.
I agree. I used to feel this way, where, hey, if you haven't seen something that everyone's seen, there's something wrong with you. I've stopped doing that, because you're not going to get someone to watch it if you tell somebody that they're an idiot for not watching the show. Game of Thrones was probably the, for the longest time until the last season, my favorite fictional universe of all time, by far.
See, you lost me at fictional universe. When we get to the fictional stuff, I'm out. Jeremy and I have had the same conversation. We're actually on the same page on that. It's just something that I can't get into. And I'm not taking away from all the people that got into it, because I know how many people got into it.
And,
I know,
like, you... The science fiction level
of
it. Yeah,
I'm just not... Yeah, I'm not...
Because, like, a mafia movie, that's fiction.
It can't... But it's more like reality when you... I can immerse myself into the and believe what's going on.
Okay. Okay, that's fair.
As opposed to, like, true fiction.
I will say that we have gotten to a level with CGI where everything now does look pretty damn spiffy. Game of Thrones had a spinoff show that debuted on Sunday, House of the Dragon. I'm not going to lie. Went into it. I was like, I'm not really expecting a whole lot. Not expecting a whole lot. I'm going to try to be fair with it, but I have definitely a high standard.
Same way you looked at the Texans.
Yeah.
Right.
Except for the Texans never, you know, ever came close to that, even when I first moved here in 2011,
but not
and 2012.
Expecting a whole lot. Not expecting a whole lot. Well, hopefully.
Yes. That's at the back of your mind. You're right. I'm like, hopefully this will be good. And then I saw the episode on Sunday, and look, I'm not going to give any spoilers. All I will say is, if you are a fan of Game of Thrones, you will like this episode.
Oh, you liked it?
Oh, it was very good. Okay. Yes, it was very, very good. It's just the proper bleeped up show it used to be, where everything is completely gray. There's no good. There's no evil. You don't know what's going to happen. Everyone has their own motivations. Anyone can die at any moment, and there will be moments where you're like, what is happening? This is so messed
same
up.
Same people behind the scenes, same actors, or
totally
different?
Totally different actors. I don't recognize one of them. I believe one of them, I think it's Matt Smith, has been in other things, and he's playing, I think, right now the most compelling and fascinating character on the show. Whatever the case, I don't want to bore you too much, because I know a lot of people right now, they're not watching said show. They probably won't watch said show because they might be like you, they might be like Jeremy. But it's got me wondering, have you ever given something that disappointed you another chance? Which is such a vague and perfectly interpretable question. Good job, Brendan Riley, behind the glass on that one. Something that disappointed you another chance. I mean, everyone's going to say a significant other, right?
Well, it doesn't have to be a significant other.
Who else could it be?
It could be a sometimer. It could be a one-timer. It could be, you know how that goes. I mean, there's always that in the mix.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing worse than that one person that, like, hey, like, this person has feelings. Maybe they want to, you know, turn this into something else.
I mean, I could be.
And you don't.
I could be as real as you want to get, and I would firmly 100% tell you, and you and I have been through this, because we've been through, in our professional lives, we've been through a lot of partnerships.
Okay.
I can tell you right now, unequivocally, that myself and Barry Laminack both felt like, after the first time, there shouldn't be a second time.
Okay.
And tried it again.
Okay.
And tried it again.
Okay.
And hated each other and wanted to kill each other. And all of a sudden, one day, a light went on, something clicked. And from that point on, we went, why did we ever hate each other? And why did we never want to do another show? And it worked. So that was one where I definitely think both of us said, nope, never again. Not doing it. Not doing it with that dude. Nope. Uh-uh. And at a certain point, we kind of, because we had never met each other before, you finally figure out what they like, don't like, or, you know, and what works. And then you found a groove.
Yeah. And when you find that groove, and it takes so long to get there, that realization of, like, oh, damn, maybe this should have been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
I actually have one. This isn't one that personally relates to me, but while we're on that topic, for those who don't know, Josh Innes is a pretty good friend of mine. The JNR show on the flagship back in the day, I thought was one of the best shows of radio that I've ever listened to. They did not like each other in the moment. I feel like they, in time afterwards, have actually come to, at the very least, have a mutual understanding. Rich Lord was the other host.
Yep.
That show was a damn good show. They worked because there was that element. Do they like each other? Do they hate each other?
There was snarky. There was not. Yeah, there was all of that.
Yeah. It was good. It was good. So that's one I wonder about for both parties. I'm not speaking for either party, but that was a damn good show. In my humble opinion, one of the best in this city's history. Have you ever given something that disappointed you another chance?
I got a hard pivot answer.
Who?
Not who.
What?
Madden. The video game God. Madden is
you
terrible.
You are so right.
Every single year.
And it's been like that for a decade.
Yeah, I was going to say about a decade.
Nothing
changes. It's like 2012, 2013.
It's the same bleeping game except for you lose features that you had in 2006 every single year. And the game is entirely designed for microtransactions so that little Timmy can run up his mommy's credit card bill.
And you know what, Paul? I get it every year.
I stopped.
I don't buy it anymore. I pay for the EA Access where you get it like for free after the Super Bowl. But I play it every year. I mean, I'm currently playing Madden 22.
Well, the reason I'm out on that game has nothing to do with the fact that they half-assed it. It's because I have rage issues when I play Madden, and I have broken several controllers playing it, and I realize I cannot do this anymore.
You're talking to the one guy in particular that knows. I don't question that. I believe that wholeheartedly.
It's bad.
Yeah. Your temper,
it's very
when
bad.
It comes to competitive things, is pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. I feel like I always behaved when we played pickup basketball for the most part, though.
So,
did Joel have to give Paul a second chance?
I invited him multiple times to play with us.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. I would say I never had like an incident like I did with a former Texans player who one time we were playing 3-on-3 under the hoop, and the guy, I kept on successfully boxing him out even though he was 100 pounds more than me, and then he put his hand on my neck, and then I turned around and said, "That's my livelihood!" Which was the lamest thing I think I've ever said in my life.
Wow, you said that.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not. I bet you that was one of those regretful moments where you wished you.
I would like to give it another
got
chance.
Got a second chance.
That one liner.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would like
there
to
was something I should have said, and it wasn't that. What about Hard Knocks? Like Madden, Hard Knocks is one where, you know.
This
what?
One's been good, though.
I haven't watched this one.
This one's actually been good.
I'm like you guys. I got to the point where now I'm not doing it anymore. Every year, I would get HBO right before the Hard Knocks because I wanted to see Hard Knocks, and I was so waiting for it to be the next version of the great ones that we saw when it first started. And now I'm just like, I'm completely out.
The Raiders season was where I was completely out because Antonio Brown froze his feet. Antonio Brown supposedly challenged
Mike Mayock
to a fight. Antonio Brown literally quit the team and did a bunch of other things because of a bleeping helmet. And that storyline was less than 10 minutes in total on that whole show. And it was all about the frozen feet. I'm sorry. That was one of the most crazy things that's ever happened in an NFL season, and the NFL not showing it is a massive blunder. And why didn't they? It was entertaining.
See, that's the thing. You can't say, well, from our imaging perspective, we don't want that image out there.
They have
their
Sean Watson in the league.
Made sure it was out there anyway.
Yes, and like it's really funny, Joel, with where the NFL draws the line of like what they want seen out there. Like you have just complete loser owners like John Mara. Oh, the Giants are a prestige franchise. My ass they are. They've sucked more than the Jets have over the last decade. And these guys are like, yeah, we don't want to see taunting. Yeah, we don't want this. We don't want that. Excuse you? Jerry Jones has it right. All drama is good. All attention is good. Lean into all of it. And you decided to go away from one of the craziest stories that we've ever seen because, oh, well, the NFL's above that. Shut the bleep up.
But you love the Browns episode with the RV in the parking lot. And the love story between Baker Mayfield and Tyrod Taylor.
Or Jarvis Landry trying to market the phrase bless him by saying bless him like a wannabe Chad Ochocinco.
100 times.
Oh, my God. That was the worst. And people were buying that shirt. Bless him. Bless him. It's no, you're not Chad Johnson. You're not saying kiss the babies. You're not saying any of the cool things that Chad Johnson said off the top of his head.
Now, I will. And again, you always had that one compelling story of the guy on the bubble that
who was like the heartbreaking death, and you have that in this season.
And when you talk about the fact that like I think it was the Tampa episode or where you were like the very last cuts when we talk about preseason and not caring about it. I only cared about going to the transaction page on the website to find out if that dude whose dad went through all this heartache, who helped him get to where he was, did he make the team or not? Did someone pick him up? That's all I wanted to know.
It was Charles James for the Houston season.
The Sox.
Yeah. I will say, though, the Houston season of Hard Knocks, I found, and maybe it's because we're biased. Did you like it? I liked it.
I think it was the first time we got a little glimpse into the window of the kind of differences between Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien.
That is true. We also got to see J.J. Watt lifting a tire to Fort Minor. 10% effort, 40% will.
Not that you've ever heard this before, but J.J. and the storylines had an ulterior motive and played it up pretty good.
I do want to make sure we don't let Paul off the hook here. He's got to answer this question before we get out of this segment.
What?
You got to answer this question.
What question?
Something that disappointed you.
Oh.
That you gave a second chance that you went back to. Aside from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, what was her name?
I'm not doing that.
Well, because why? Because she might be listening?
It'll need to be a person.
I mean, I'm sure the Emerald City had some females too.
Actually, no.
Oh.
Believe it or not, no. That was just a desert.
Oh.
There's a lot of people with blue hair that wanted to go hiking.
Those flannel wearing, granola eating tree huggers.
Hey, well, I mean, and look, I mean, everyone's.
I lived up there. I lived in Portland. Remember that.
Oh, wow. And you survived.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. You know, you can go to the LARPing convention.
Found my happy place here in Houston, Texas.
Yeah. Look, man. There are several
females.
Yeah.
You want to go alphabetically?
No, I don't.
Okay.
All right. No, I'm trying to. I'm trying to grow.
can this be on Instagram? Can it be on the gram tonight as part of the Gallant?
No.
Put them all out there, you know, one by one.
We're gonna start the Gallant Says podcast back up again tomorrow.
Brittany, which one?
So I don't have to answer that question. Okay. Well,
there was Brittany and Ashley, and there's someone else that ended in E.
Someone that disappointed you.
No, wait a minute. He didn't say someone. He said something. I said someone.
Damn. I don't.
Think about it.
I'll answer it later. He is Joel Blank. I'm Paul Gallant, traumatized by my past right here. The Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'll answer that question really quickly here.
Today on Dr. Phil, a segment turns into a life-changing moment for Paul.
Have you ever given something that disappointed you another chance? I'll just say that there was somebody that in college I met who had a boyfriend that was in another school. I was very into this person. Told myself I was not going to allow myself to get caught up in feelings. Did. And over about a decade, despite this person keeping me around just enough to, you know, every now and then there would be like a close to something moment.
Was there the mutual, you knew there was something there?
I knew there was something there.
Okay.
The problem
was she
did, but she handled it in her own way.
Mm.
And the funny thing is, there was this thing where, like, whenever I thought, like, I was over her, that was when she would, like, decide to, like, just waltz back in and we'd talk a lot. And if I'd be dating somebody else, I would be essentially, like, emotionally cheating on that person I was dating with her by just texting with her. So anyway, long story short, last fall, me and this person, like, all the things I always wanted to happen, happened. I think it's just, like, absolutely magical day, night, etc. And then the next day... It's right back to where it was before. And I was like, damn, I just keep on doing this over and over again. The real person, though, that was disappointing anyone here was me. Because I was the one who kept on doing this, like a total idiot. But we've all done it before.
Well, then that means that this is a low-key, this is a positive story. Because you're saying you gave yourself a second chance.
And a third and a fourth.
Oh.
And a fifth.
Maybe not as positive.
I'll just say, eventually we kicked the door down and we found out that it wasn't worth it.
See, I can say that unequivocally. Like, there have been situations in my life where I continually, because of certain factors, that you say, you know what? She completely disappointed me, but yet I am relentless. I am going to, there's no way, it's like, I'm going to keep going. And then it happens a second time and a third time. Yep. And you finally, at a certain point, sit back and go, why do I keep doing this? Because it's like self-inflicted yep. wounds.
But you keep on doing it anyway because you're like, well. The idea of this person who, in the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin, you are putting up on a pedestal, it is just something that they'll never be. And it's unfair to expect that of that person. So the good news is I am actually finally past this person. Anyway, we want to talk about the sports, right? Because this is a sports talk show. Sorry for dumping all my feelings on you over the last 20 minutes. This is the way things go. All right. So, Joel, I got a question for you. Justin Verlander is on the mound tonight in a game where we'll also see Carlos Correa back with the Minnesota Twins against the Astros.
I thought this was the Aaron Sanchez return game that everybody was celebrating.
Aaron Sanchez,
a guy part of a three-person no hitter in his first game pitched as an Astro.
I'll be honest, I didn't know who Aaron Sanchez was.
I think there's a chance.
Did you make that person up?
No, I did not.
You didn't? Okay. Well,
look it up.
I do know a lot about baseball, after all. Justin Verlander is in the midst of an incredible season. I think you could argue that this has been his best season with the Houston Astros. Hell, you could probably argue, and maybe Brendan Riley can shed some light on this, that this has been his best season ever.
Well, they've done the side-by-side comparisons to the year that he won MVP and Cy Young, and his numbers are better this year in almost every category than that season.
The question is, are you invested in him getting a Cy Young Award at age 39 with the Houston Astros to be the next recipient of said award?
Oh, he's going to win it. I think that even when he loses or didn't get a decision in a game that everybody was looking forward to seeing when they were playing the White Sox and you were looking at the two top contenders for Cy Young, I think that when you look at it and say he didn't get his doors blown off, minus a late gaffe that gave up the two runs that tied the game, he outpitched the name escapes me, the White Sox pitcher. But
Cease.
Dylan Cease.
Yeah.
He outpitched Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease has control issues. Verlander was in total control the entire game. You look at it and say, aside from one game against the Mariners in Seattle, it's really hard to find a game where he didn't keep you in it, even if he didn't have his best stuff. And the fact that he's going to win another Cy Young Award is just the ultimate credit to a guy at 39 years old. It's unheard of. 39 years old, coming off Tommy John. And like you said, he's going to have the best season of his career. Astros fans don't like the fact that they're going to have to fathom paying him more money next year. He's worth every single penny. And you know the Astros aren't going to make it a 10 or 12-year deal or look like to do something stupid. He said he wants to pitch till 45. You could pitch for the Astros and pitch till you're 45 as long as a couple things happen. You continue to pitch at a certain level, and you're okay with the fact that you're going to get 1 and 2-year deals where you're just, it's not exactly a prove it because you'll have an extra year on top of it. But it's not going to be long-term security of a 5-year deal.
There was a piece in The Athletic that came out today that talked about the negotiations between Jim Crane and between Justin Verlander. I guess Verlander was in Italy. And when they eventually made the extension where Verlander, right before the lockout happened, signs this 2-year exceptionally prove-it deal that does give Verlander some options. Verlander was coming off of Tommy John surgery at age 38, 39, you had a pretty good idea that had he hit the open market, it's not going to be exactly the hey, everyone wants me kind of party that he's showing up at, But now, that's clearly going to happen. And just given, Joel, the Astros' track record when it comes to keeping stars, they have been a lot like the Patriots in that they have chosen to move on from guys who they feel like, this is too expensive.
Well, we found out in the Correa negotiations when Correa spilled the beans and said they've already said they don't do long term at big money.
Correa, Springer,
Cole, but they didn't really. Cole was, you knew where he was going all along, but Cole was part of that.
Yes, Cole plays for the Scott Boris-Borises, and on top of that,
he's got a hat.
Dallas Keuchel is someone who they were like, we think we've seen the most that Keuchel's going to be able to bring to
the table.
And they
made him a hell of an offer that, in retrospect, had he taken, he'd have made more money than doing what he did.
Right. Honestly, I'm kind of glad that
oh, absolutely.
Happened. Because, that was a guy who was so based off of location, the velocity falls off a bit. But, okay, anyway, back to the question I was trying to get to. do you see that the Astros might potentially change the way that they have done things and make an exception for a guy who is 39 years old, going to be 40 next year, give him not a long-term deal, but I would imagine a deal that would be comparative to something that someone would give him on the open market. And I'm guessing we're talking like quarterback per year money. We're talking,
we're talking
40 to 50.
And again,
year.
Brendan is our resident Detroit expert, but there's the guy that his benchmark on everything is Max Scherzer, a guy he used to pitch with in Detroit. Scherzer's getting 43 a year. Scherzer is around the same age. Scherzer is neck and neck with him in strikeouts in mm-hmm. a lot of categories. He's going to want Scherzer money.
And
that's what he's
going
to start
money.
At. Yeah. And he's earned the right to say that he deserves it. It's just how far are you willing to go? How many years are you willing to commit? Because as good as he's been coming off Tommy John, how long will it last? When you fall off, are you going to fall completely off? Are you going to get another injury?
Yep.
We don't know.
Do you think that the relationship between Jim Crane and Justin Verlander, which you can see a little bit more of in that piece in The Athletic, is strong enough to where Jim Crane or James Click can ask Justin Verlander for some of the same, lack of a better term, qualifiers for a contract that you've seen in this one, where he had to pitch a certain amount of innings to potentially opt out? Because, hey, that might be a nice little cherry on top of a deal for Verlander, is like, hey, we will give you $40 million this year, maybe a little bit more the next year, but you could theoretically opt out, say you continue to pitch at this level, and we'll give you something more, or somebody else will give you something more. Do you think that Verlander would listen to that after having done it this past year?
So here's the thing. First of all, you can take the name James Click completely out of this conversation.
Okay. This is all about Crane.
Separate from anything else the Astros do and he's in charge of. What I've said this when they made the initial deal. This is a buddy-buddy deal between the owner and his good friend Justin Verlander, who they golf together and hang out together, and they're close. He's not going to Click, and he's not checking with anybody else. This is Jim Crane making a deal with his buddy. And so it's going to come down to, if you need Click's input, it's going to be, what are the clauses the league says have to be in a contract? But other than that, if you're telling me that there's going to be kickers and incentives and bonuses, you can build those in. But I think that what the bigger discussion is going to be, are we talking about a little bit of a hometown discount? He doesn't need the money, obviously. And the parameters that are important to Verlander at this point in his career, he can get a ton of money from anybody. But if he goes, we know he's chasing 300 wins. We know he's chasing the strikeouts. We know that there are certain things, because he's a historian of the game, that mean a ton to him, that he's not going to get with the Tigers. He's not going to get the wins with the Tigers. He can get some strikeouts, but his strikeouts are down even this year. He needs to be with a team that's going to give him the best chance to win games every night, that's going to give him a chance to win another World Series ring, especially because he is tied in, as much as he hates it because he was a pitcher, to 17 and the cheating scandal. And he needs a team that's going to help him to achieve his individual goals to solidify his legendary status for the Hall of Fame. So that's why I think the Astros have a huge advantage. The Cubs have money, but the Cubs are going to be like the Tigers. You know, the Dodgers can only spend so much, and I don't know when they draw the line. Just like the Yankees, who need starting pitching help. I think that when you look at it, you go, he and Kate love the fact that they have relative anonymity when they go out. It's not paparazzis. It's not, you know, cameras and everybody haggling with them. They like it. They've said that. He only needs to make so much money, but he's got a chance to continue to win for the next however long he plans on playing right here every single time he gets the ball.
He is Joel Blank. I'm Paul Gallant in for Jeremy Branham, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, the Killer Bees. Coming up next, a question that I threw out earlier today on Twitter. Where does Carlos Correa rank all time in Houston sports? How high up on the list will he be? We're going to read off a bunch of names. You get to determine where you feel like he falls. Next, right here, it again is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Paul Gallant in for Jeremy Branham. Congratulations to Jeremy, his wife, to crew as well on their entrance into the world. All right. Carlos Correa making his re-entrance to Minute Maid Park tonight. And the question I have for you, which you can answer, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Where would you put Carlos Correa all time amongst Houston athletes? You know, at the top.
No, we're not doing a Mount Rushmore because, you know, I hate those.
We're not doing a Mount Rushmore. I'm saying, like, how far on the list do you think that you would go before you said Carlos Correa?
And let's do an ESPN Top 25.
Okay.
Right? The ESPN Top 25 like we would do for college football rankings.
Okay.
I think that in no particular order, I think you have Akeem, Baggy, Biggio, Earl Campbell. I think those are the 34s, and then Nolan Ryan somewhere on that list.
I think that, yeah, the top three has to be, in my opinion, Hakeem, Nolan Ryan, and on top of that, I would put Earl Campbell in there as well.
I think Baggy and Biz, and I think a lot of people forget.
I think they're 4 or 5.
Because I think that Earl, I mean, because I think Nolan, people forget, Mets, Angels, Rangers, he didn't play the majority of his career with the Astros or be that one team in the city like Dream did, like Baggy and Biggio did. And I think that that resonates in terms of the legend status.
I will say, you know, I said that too quickly. I put Altuve over both of them.
Over Bagwell and Biggio?
Yes.
I think Altuve is very high on that list as well.
Justin Verlander is in the conversation, I think, though, because he wasn't here
shorter
quite
term,
as long.
Again, other teams. But, yeah, I mean, when you start looking at it, if by the time all is said and done, if he's close to playing as many games in an Astros uniform as he was in a Tigers uniform, and, Brendan, I don't know how many years total he played for the Tigers, but, look, it's been more than a couple now that he's been doing great things in an Astros uniform, that if he does plan on playing into his 40s and he plays here, at a certain point, he's in the conversation and he goes higher up on the list.
So we're just going to continue to list names until we think that somebody,
I think,
that
as much
Carlos Correa would be
James
ahead of
Harden,
him.
James Harden.
Harden has to be
was part of a big point in history for Rockets success. He has to be in there.
Harden has to be in there. Some other basketball ones. Just tell me if you would put Carlos Correa above this guy, because you are the basketball guy here. Yao Ming.
No.
Clyde Drexler.
That's close, because again, Clyde's a Blazer.
Quick time.
Yeah,
he was here.
But he did win a set. He won a championship
he did
with
win
the
a
city, but so did Correa. I'd say Correa above Clyde in terms of, well, but you know what? See, there's another caveat. From Sterling High School to the Cougs.
That's true.
That's
good
the
point.
Houston connection.
Good
I
point.
Think Clyde is probably
Clyde's above.
Above Correa.
Tracy McGrady.
Correa's above McGrady.
Okay. Moses Malone, going way back in time.
I'd say Moses is above Correa.
Okay. So, right now, I don't know. We probably said about like 8, 9 names, and what, only a couple that we would put ahead. As far as the baseball side of things, we've already said Nolan Ryan. We've said Jose Altuve. We've said Justin Verlander. We've said Craig Biggio. We have said Jeff Bagwell. Lance Berkman, above or below Carlos Correa?
Oh, boy. That's tough because he didn't win a title, but he did so much for you, and he's borderline Hall of Fame.
Because I don't know that Correa will be a Hall of Famer right now. I don't. I think the cheating thing is going to be
that.
Attached to him for the rest
but again,
of his career.
But again, I don't know that Berkman will. I mean, that Berkman will. And as a switch hitter, his numbers are phenomenal. I just don't know that he'll get enough national support and votes. But I think, boy, that's tough, man. I put the body of work that Lance did, All-Stars and otherwise, I'll put Lance above Correa.
Okay. One that's being thrown in there, and I think that This is a pretty good one. J.R. Richard, you can't forget him.
J.R. Richard, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a guy that...
James Rodney was a legend. Unfortunately, career cut short, but by the...
All with the Astros from 1971 to 1980.
And all that. But, yeah, I mean, J.R. was a problem for everybody in baseball, and he was dominant, but it was a smaller window of time.
Still 10 years. I mean, he was an Astro for 10 years. Now, before... I think the relevant years in the 1980s, 1986 in particular and stuff. But
here's the thing, because when we're doing the list, the one thing that you have to realize is I think a lot of it is folklore and the intangible things, mound visits, that put Correa in everybody's heart. But in terms of not, you can't forget about how many seasons he was hurt. How many seasons?
Yeah.
The numbers just don't add up to all-star and above.
The playoff moments. And the yelling into a mic moment,
yeah,
add a little bit of lore to
Correa time
a guy that's
was a home
a lot of
run
games.
At a time when the rest of his playoffs he had two other hits, I think. So you know he struggled mightily, but he had a big clutch, you know, big time hit that people remember. People forget because they remember that home run that he didn't have a good playoffs that year in terms of offensively. So I think that's where a lot gets lost in the shovel with his availability and the numbers he put up consistently with injury. So I think JR is above him.
Great Houston athletes. We're basically trying to figure out where Correa
Warren Moon's above him, right?
Yeah, I think you got to put Warren Moon above him. Those early 90s Oilers teams, it's a shame, of course, they had the big collapse of the Bills. That's what you remember them for, and for the drama that happened in the year. What was it afterwards where they had all that bleep hit the fan? I think there's like a documentary on the NFL Network about it. Roger Clemens, really quick little window, but I mean, the guy, you know, played at UT too. He is a Houston guy. And it was like a nice finishing chapter to his career.
Yeah, there's local ties there for sure. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, but again, he played for multiple teams.
Got you to a World Series.
Didn't win it.
True.
Correa did.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say from a Houston perspective, I think that Correa is above Clemens.
I think that's a close one. I'm not a Clemens fan because of, you know, I grew up in Boston, but I think I would put Clemens above him in that one.
Clemens above Correa?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I think I go the other direction in the fact that Correa won one here and he was here longer.
That part's big. I think that the local ties with Clemens just being a Texas guy. I think
Andy Pettit's a Deer Park guy, and Andy Pettit was there with Clemens, but Andy Pettit was a Yankee.
Clemens, but yeah, you're right. I always think of Andy Pettit as a Yankee. I think of Roger Clemens as kind of in the same way I think of Nolan Ryan, in that like he pitched for a bunch of different teams.
And pitched for almost every team in the AL East but the Orioles.
Pretty nuts. We have a call, 713-780-3776. Where does Carlos Correa rank among Houston athletes all time? Because we're thinking, like, I don't know, probably in like the 20s, maybe. Yeah.
That's why I said top 25. I think he's in the top 25, but I don't think he's as high as some people might at first glance, you know, think.
Josh is calling in. Josh, what's up?
He was a great leader after the scandal, but I think we lost him when he signed with Boris. But I rank him up there with Tim Bogar and Morgan Enzberg around that level.
Okay.
Oh, and
we're going pretty far down the list then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Josh.
Appreciate that one, Josh.
Wow, I didn't see that coming either. I mean, I can
Morgan
see
him Enzberg. Come
at
on,
the bottom end of the top 25, but Morgan Enzberg and Tim Bogar?
No, come on. This is a guy that had like legendary.
Adam Everett? Is that next?
yeah, right. That would be
Don't
that would
go
be
that
one.
Far.
Texan side of things. We and this is the tricky
Andre,
thing.
JJ. JJ's above him.
JJ's above him.
Andre's above him. Yes, he is. Played here longer.
I know
he's
he played here
in
longer,
the Hall of Fame.
And it's not his fault.
Right. He didn't pick the quarterback.
You know, I was a lot more certain about Andre making the Hall
You'd
of Fame.
You'd put Correa over Andre?
I feel like I have more memories with Carlos Correa than I do
with
Andre.
That's the fool's gold that people are buying into.
Mm-hmm.
They're letting that tug at your heartstrings. You're given the second chance to,
yeah,
as opposed to the pure numbers and longevity.
Yeah, you're probably right on that one. DeAndre Hopkins is in that borderline zone too.
Yeah, that's I think Correa's over DeAndre. Yeah.
As far as other football players, we mentioned Warren Moon already. We mentioned Earl Campbell already. I mean,
I don't think Robert Brazil has the cachet and the he just.
And I think that's an Adams family problem making the team leave town.
Sure,
I think it might be a little bit different if the guy was still a part of this. You
but
know,
the Robert
city.
Brazils, the Dan Pastorinis. I think that they
Bruce Matthews.
They weren't marketed the same way. Even Hall of Famer like Bruce Matthews, Ray Childress was a big time guy that had all the local endorsements. But yeah, I mean, I think Correa, again, when you build in the combo platter of all the cachet and the big moments we're talking about, and the fact that the longevity says, I think he's above a lot of those guys.
We will keep this on the table. 713-780-3776.
Text line went nuts with it.
780-ESPN. We'll get to some of those texts. Also, on this morning's episode of The Bench, John Granato flirted with the idea of a Carlos Correa return down the line. Would you consider that? Would Carlos Correa consider that? We'll talk about that next right here. It's the Killer Bees with Paul Gallant in for Jeremy Branham, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Paul Gallant in for Jeremy Branham, Joel Blank to my left. So we do have a couple of nominees as far as best Houston athletes that would be considered ahead of Carlos Correa if we were making a list that were from outside the three major sports that are played in this town. Football, basketball, baseball. George Foreman, Carl Lewis.
That dude in a grill, he's magic. I mean, you have to honor the man with the grill.
I did have one. For the longest
I had one
time.
Too.
Used it every day. for about 10 years, and I finally got rid of it recently.
As a single person, it is a game changer.
It is fantastic. I mean, you know, you want to have a little
Brendan,
breakfast.
I mean, you're not a big prepare-your-own-food guy, but a George Foreman grill?
Fantastic.
I cook a couple times a week, but I don't own a George Foreman grill.
Never did?
No.
Boy, they were...
To be honest with you, like, I started cooking more lately, and I was like, as you guys are talking
you
about
save
it...
save so much money,
I was like, I wonder if I should.
You should. You save money, and it's healthy.
The king,
I meant to get a George Foreman grill.
The key
I
to the George Foreman grill was you could do chicken breasts on a George Foreman grill.
Yep, you can. Others. Simone Biles.
Carl Lewis.
You have Cheryl Swoops. Cynthia Cooper.
Tina Thompson.
Where
do coaches rate on this? Because if you include coaches, now you got Bum Phillips, Rudy Tomjanovich.
Guy Lewis.
Guy V. Am I forgetting anybody?
I mean, there's a lot.
AJ's not going to make that list.
I got to say, though, I think for the sake of being fair, let's...
athletes?
Any dynamo players?
For the sake of, I don't care, let's just keep it to the three sports that,
Someone said Cushing because they're both cheaters, and I was like, how is Correa a cheater? And then I figured, oh, yeah, that's right, the scandal in the garbage
happened.
Can.
Yeah, that happened. Brian Cushing, listen, I mean, he suffered from athlete overtraining syndrome.
Okay, Todd Marinovich, whatever.
It actually was a thing that he said. You know?
I know.
It's a great spin zone. So 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN's how you text
Mario
or call
Williams.
In. Yeah. Well, I mean, we could put a list together of most overpaid Houston athletes because someone had twitched in already, twitch.tv/ESPN975, Kelvin Cato.
Oh, God. I lived that one. Don't get me started.
How excited were you about Kelvin Cato when it happened?
The man who got a massive contract because of a preseason triple-double. He got a double.
Man.
He got a triple-double against the Blazers in preseason, and they gave him 40-some-odd, $49 million.
Well, some people take the preseason seriously. Sorry,
Thursday night.
So, John Granato, earlier this morning on the bench, flirted with the idea of a Carlos Correa return down the line. Would you consider that? I'll answer that question first. Assuming that Jeremy Pena, in year two, is more consistent than he's been in year one, which is a fair assumption to make, and the fact that you're paying him what you're paying him, I say no.
I do, too. I heard John and Lance talking about this. And they were like, look, you know, I don't think they were trying to be critical of either side. But they were like, but the door is open because everybody, you know, loves Carlos. That at a certain point, he didn't think Carlos holds any grudges. And maybe there's a time down the road that he comes back. And I'm driving in the car and I'm going, but where are you putting him? Pena's not going anywhere and he's at short. And I get it. You could say Correa's got a better arm. He probably has better, he's got better range. But overall, you hit it on the head. For what you're paying Pena for the next foreseeable future of years and what he's already done in his first season period or first appearance in Major League Baseball, he's not going anywhere.
There's nowhere in the infield to move him to, too, because you're not, I mean, are you going to move
He said he doesn't want to be a third baseman. He said you're not going to play first.
Bregman's a great defensive third baseman and is on fire right now. Second base, you have Jose Altuve. I mean, maybe, and look, I know Dusty Baker hasn't really been that open to many alternative outfield options, if you will.
No.
Carlos Correa, outfielder. How about that?
I think a lot of people would say you move Pena, you don't move Correa, and I think that's wrong. But I think, you know, Correa has already solidified himself from a shortstop perspective to where he doesn't deserve to have to be moved. Would he, you know, Yuli was the third baseman and an infielder. Yuli made the move and was open to playing first base. Carlos Correa is not a first baseman, nor should he be.
No. No, he shouldn't. I do, though, look at the outfield, and I'm like, I don't care, honestly, about how he probably doesn't have that much range. I am tired of seeing randos. Yes, Jake Myers, rando, out in the outfield. I don't get it. What is happening? What is going on?
I think it's where they're playing or where they're not playing, too. I think that you keep putting Yordan in left field. We've already said, and granted, it was something different when he ran off the field the other night, but the one thing you can't afford to do is lose him because of an injury caused by playing the outfield as well. Trey Mancini's a guy, you don't know if he can play left field for you or not because he won't put him out there more than one game.
Nope.
I mean, Chaz McCormick has proven to be a guy as much as Chandler Rome says, Dusty doesn't like him. You can't keep him out of the lineup, and he's been hitting better and better. He's got an above-average arm, and he's quick. Put him in center field more and more until he proves to you that he can't play the position because Jake Myers looks scared in the outfield. And though he's had a couple of games recently where he's got some hits, Jake Meyers, to me, doesn't factor into this plan for this season.
Is Meyers a click thing? Is it a Baker thing?
No, it's a click thing 100 times over where he has said multiple times, he is our center fielder of the future.
Can we, like, put, I don't know, Christian Vasquez out there?
Would you stop it? You're not going to put a catcher in center
field. You know what? Whatever. It's defense. I'm just a simple.
We're not playing Madden.
I do declare I am just a simple sports talk show host. I don't know nothing about baseball.
You're just throwing anybody
baseball.
On the roster in center field.
I also don't care about defense. I'm very pro. Like, who cares about defense?
Give me my bat.
In center field is my favorite suggestion that's ever been made in baseball.
Nothing could be more ridiculous. But okay. If you're saying, and to Paul's point, you're just throwing randos in center field. Well, isn't that what Dubon is?
Well, here's
a rando who can't hit in center field and can't throw?
You already have something. Well, that's fair. You already have something ridiculous going on. Martin Maldonado, apparently Bill Belichick as a catcher, consistently getting more at-bats than Christian Vasquez.
Well,
but he's so good at calling the strikes. Oh, because no catchers can do that other than Martin Maldonado, who's batting 180. But, Paul, look at what he's done the last couple of weeks. Shot your bleeping pie hole. I'm tired of the Martin Maldonado experience.
Since the All-Star break, Paul, he's almost hitting 300.
Great. And his average is still like 180.
Well, sometimes you dig a hole that's so deep, you can't completely get back to level ground.
And sometimes you shouldn't be allowed to dig your way out of that hole. Sometimes you should just be left to rot.
Look, when you look at their runners thrown out, their defensive numbers, they are parallel all across the board. I get what you're saying. Look, I thought that this was going to be a work in progress because we said, look, for any catcher, you got to learn your pitching staff. You got to learn what they do well, what they don't, what their pitches are, how they're thinking, and what's been effective for them. So it takes time. So I figured early on that Maldi would get a lot more of the starts than Vasquez. But I thought by the time we got close to the playoffs that Vasquez would be getting more than Maldi, but it doesn't seem that way because we know Pawpaw's got those gut feelings, and Pawpaw plays his tummy, and when the tummy tells him it's Maldi, it's Maldi.
Oh, my God, Pawpaw, that's funny. Look,
I saw a license plate today on the way here that said Pawpaw, and I thought I was going to drive next to Dusty Baker.
Really?
Yeah. I was very disappointed when it wasn't him in the driver's seat.
That would be pretty funny if he had a vanity plate. I couldn't see Dusty Baker
I would
doing
see
that.
Dusty as a personalized plate that just said Dusty.
I do want to get him to answer this, and I'm going to try to ask this at some point tonight.
You're going
to
pull a Ozzie Guillen moment again?
Well, that was the last time I asked the question at a ballpark. Ozzie Guillen told me to grow the bleep up, mother bleeper.
Have you ever seen that video, Brendan? It's worth your time.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
I don't know if I've seen it or did it make national news?
It sure did.
Because he made national news all the time.
Yeah,
being in the AL Central. I enjoyed lots.
He was on the Miami Marlins teams all the time.
That's true. He was on the Miami Marlins during that moment in time, and no one had asked him about like the whole "Hey, I love Fidel Castro" thing. And I was like, "Well, here I am getting paid money to cover the pregame for an Astros Marlins game with both teams in like fifth place, and everyone's asking questions, and like my heart's racing. I'd never reported on a baseball game before, so I just ask the question, and Ozzie just lights me up. You can hear me being uncomfortable asking the question because he asked me the first time. I was like, what did you say? And I was like, I had to repeat the question twice. And then I go back into the
media room,
and I got yelled at by someone
from the Astros.
No.
Another reporter?
No, I was spoken to like I was a child over it. I don't feel like bringing it up anymore.
Barry Warner?
No, it wasn't Barry.
Oh,
no,
he would do that.
No, Barry would have congratulated me on that 100%. No, it was a prominent baseball writer, whatever. I'm growing. I don't want to, like, I don't care anymore. But I just thought, like, I remember thinking to myself, that person was a security guard because he was wearing, like, a polo that had, like, an MLB shield on it. And I was like, am I about to get kicked out the ballpark for asking that question? But anyway, sorry. This is a self.
Well, don't get kicked out today, please.
I won't. The question I want to ask, and I want to ask it in a fair way, like if you're Dusty Baker, how do you balance like defense with offense when you're building a lineup? Because he brought up when he was asked about like some of the guys that are in the lineup. Oh well, this person needs to field for this specific pitcher, and I'm sure he's thought it out. Like he knows baseball. I don't. But at the same time, it's just weird. I feel like everyone today is going in the other direction. Like, hey, get the best lineup that you possibly can out there on a given night. And, you know, you just added two bats that I feel like should be playing at least more nights than not. And that has not been the case to this point. And what is it? Like, are they not competent defensively in any way? I don't know.
It's a really good question because, you know, the other thing I would ask him is, when do you finally get information on what a player's strengths are? Because when you're interviewed on national TV and you, the one thing you know about Trey Mancini is that you both beat cancer and that Vasquez could be a good pinch runner. I mean, it's a lot worse than saying that the all-star starting pitcher is a guy you've never seen pitch before when he pitched against you in the ALCS. I'm just curious because you know internally there's a battle that no one will speak about publicly between him and Click. And so you wonder, it's one thing now because you're so far ahead in the division, you're 3 games up on the Yankees for the best record in the American League, so there's not really a whole lot to worry about right now, but who's going to have the ultimate trump card for setting the lineup in the playoffs? Because Dusty thinks it's him, and you know Click is just biting his tongue over all this stuff.
Yeah.
But when does he decide, now when it all matters, I'm saying something?
It's a good question, and they're going to have to figure that out soon. And I don't know how you go about doing it, because Dusty Baker does seem like the kind of guy who has enough cachet to say no and to make it more difficult.
Well, he'll put up a fight. And he'll punch you with his wristbands on with his picture on.
I get standing up for yourself. Like, he's been doing this a long time. He hasn't won a World Series, but like I would get...
He's a Hall of Fame manager.
Standing up for yourself on that front. But at the same time, there's this old school nature with which he operates. And look, I'm not a baseball expert. I just am confused consistently by those decisions. Whatever. I mean, it hasn't cost them yet. It's the playoffs, as you mentioned. That's where that potentially becomes
our man
one.
D. Green already found the clip and put it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah?
Of Paulie and Ozzie.
Oh, yeah. That was a good... These are the times we remember. Yeah. That was a good time. That was a
good
time.
Got to see it, Brendan. I'll tag you on it.
We could play that, you know, maybe in the next hour or something like that. You might have to censor
good
the,
times.
The bleeps.
Oh, you not might. You're going to have to
you
censor
know what
it's going to sound like Morse code.
My favorite part about it was not what happened. It was... And I stopped recording after this happened because the little media scrum had walked away. It was when Ozzie said right afterwards, "Nice try, kid." Like, I legitimately thought it was funny that he said that, and I wasn't mad at him for swearing at me either. Like, a lot of people are like, "Oh, are you insulted?" I was like, "No, I'm not. I think it's hilarious that Ozzie Guillen told me to grow the bleep up." I had to ask the question. Well, I'm getting paid. What am I getting paid for? Anyway, it is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
What happened there?
It's a brain fart. You know, I'm Paul Gallant sitting in for the much more professionally polished Jeremy Branham. Congratulations to he and his wife on crew welcoming him to the world. Coming up next, how the Texans might not be the worst organization.